That whole love at first sight thing, not that.
Okay. Not us. We're just kind of like a human.
In 2020, at this point, anything you post on social media is going to make someone mad.
Yes, 100%.
Like, so we can just throw that all in the wash. The point is, between you and God, what are you doing?
You being guilty is not helpful to me.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
That's what no one is fighting for, you to be sorry.
We were walking down the street on the boat line a few months ago, and elderly white gentleman yelled out, there's your reparations.
Hey, welcome back to Burn the Ships, the podcast for dreamers who want to live more courageously. I'm Jordan Nations, and today I am so excited to be joined by my friends Camilo and Emily Buchanan. These guys are incredible. If you do not know them, Camilo and Emily both do a ton of creative and ministry work here in Atlanta. They are also newlyweds. They got married about a month ago, and today we dive into what that first month of marriage has been like. We dive into what this moment with racism in America is like as an interracial couple, and what it looks like to be courageous and follow God in the middle of this weird 2020 world we live in. You are going to love this conversation, and if you do, I hope you'll share it on social media, tag us, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is, so that your friends can hear it too. Thank you so much for listening. Here's my conversation with Camilo and Emily.
Hey, welcome back to Burn the Ships. My name's Jordan Nations, and I'm here today.
Burn all of them.
Honestly, burn the technology at this point. That is what I feel, because just getting this thing to turn on here was a real treat. But I am joined today by my friends, Camilo and Emily Buchanan.
Hello, hello.
Yeah.
Is that weird to hear yet? Where are we?
It is.
Okay, I'm used to it.
You're used to it. Well, yeah, that makes more sense.
He's had a little more time to adjust.
Uh-huh. What was your maiden name? What was before that?
Thomas.
Thomas. Thomas Buchanan.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you had a maiden name.
Yeah.
A maiden. That's something I fill out on security questions.
Yeah.
that's the only place. I like my new name a lot, to be
you
clear.
Do? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Buchanan, I mean, it's strong.
It is.
It's strong. I'm joined by you guys. Maybe I'm really excited about this conversation today, honestly, because this is very full circle for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, back in January or February, I texted you, Camille, and I said, hey, you've done a podcast. I'm about to do a podcast. What do I need to know? We met for coffee. I think that was also the first time I met you.
That was in 2020.
Yeah, I think so. This what is the longest year of all time, dude.
We're not even 6 months fully
like
through.
4 years ago.
Man. Yes. Okay. I think that was in 2020.
Yeah, that
right
makes sense. Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine going to a coffee shop this year. But I guess there were a couple months where that was. I
mean, we were doing a lot kosher. in January.
We were 1 foot apart from each other.
Yeah.
We thought nothing of it. We shook hands.
We hugged. High five.
We did all the
sorts
things.
Of craziness.
Well, why don't you guys? This conversation is going to be awesome. It is full circle. And really, yeah, I have a lot to thank because you helped me get on the right path.
And you're crushing it, bro.
It's so fun. It is really fun. It's more work than I thought, but it's very fun.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah. you had a great podcast called The Pass Down, right? Mm-hmm. Was the name of it. It's still up there. I think it's still running.
Still running. A friend of mine, Risa Kubandi, is the host now.
Okay.
And doing great stuff over there.
And
me and Emily were just on that podcast.
Yeah,
oh,
like
cool. Very cool.
2 weeks ago, maybe?
You're pros. for people listening, give them like a quick intro for each of you. 60 seconds, whatever you want, just of who are you and what are we doing here?
Emily, you intro me and I'll intro.
Oh, this is fun.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's funny. Okay. Camilo's here with us today. He is preacher extraordinaire.
True.
Leader, champion.
A real hunk.
Man of hotness. excellent husband in training. And he can clean. He cleaned this room for you today.
Really?
It was not me.
Oh.
So
I did see the Roomba going when I came in. I don't know how much. Have you seen that? I don't know if he's just telling you that
we
he's
named
cleaning.
Her
no, yeah, we did have to employ some help.
Okay.
We can't do it on our own. But yeah, Camilo's amazing. He works at Passion City Church leading the young adult ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Also speaks in various places around the country, hopefully more as Corona calms down.
It did mess up the flow.
It messed up the flow.
I feel that to my core.
I know you do.
Feel that to my core.
Messed up the flow. But this is Emily.
Oh, I'm done? Okay.
Oh,
I mean, you can
you got
go
more?
On.
No, it's okay.
We got all the time in the world.
I'm just going to say he's my favorite person. That's the last thing.
So sweet. This is Emily Buchanan. She is my wife, she is
his favorite part.
Yes, she is my only wife.
That's good.
Something I say like 3 or 4 times a day to her. I'm like, you know, you're my only wife. I don't know what that does for her or for me. It just feels good. She is a writer. She is a leader in our young adult ministry and in various things. And everywhere she goes, she ends up leading somewhere. She is a project and communications manager. She is a mentor to young ladies and is great. And she is the lead designer and CEO of Plain and Simple Company, her lovely new greeting card business.
Which looks awesome. I saw it.
Which is also living right here in this room. Yes.
We're in the office, actually. The world headquarters.
Head honcho. Plain and Simple. That's what her title is, actually. Head honcho of Plain and Simple.
How did you guys meet? Tell me that.
We met through passion. They were having we were both in college at Georgia State, and they were having a glow-in-the-dark kickball tournament for the college students, and we went, and we have a mutual friend, Andy Pearson. He was my roommate for like the last 4 years.
I met Andy the other day.
You know Andy?
I just met him. Yeah,
the best.
He's a fun guy. He said, "Hey, this is my friend Emily," and I said, "Hello." And
that was literally it.
Hello.
That whole love first sight thing. Not us.
We're just kind of like
a human. That was my first ever, like, when you go to college, you know, you're trying to do things so you're not lame.
Yes.
It's like, I'm going to be brave enough to go to this event and try and meet all these strangers. So he was one of the many strangers I met that night. That was it.
That was it.
Acknowledgement at first sight.
Acknowledgement at first sight. Said hello. And then we played kickball. And that was that.
And he scored on me.
Yes. Then eventually we started hanging out and getting to know each other.
Cool. And here we are.
Yeah, crazy.
That was in November of 2014, and we got married 24 days ago.
24 days ago.
And it took all of that time to get here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet five that is and a half whole years. Conversation in its own.
A whole thing. If you know, you know.
Emily's working on a book on it eventually.
Oh, that's fine. For sure. Okay.
Her second book. She's working on one now, but then the next one, I guess, could be on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's awesome. One day when I start a relationship podcast, you guys will be the first guests.
Thank you.
We will just do a 5-part series. Yes. We'll do one per year.
One per year. What was 2015? Right, okay, now take us through 2016. Right. There was a breakup there. 2017, another breakup there. 2018, nothing. She moved to Africa.
Okay, cool.
2019.
And he still managed to moved back, get me to marry him.
Started dating again and got engaged and then got married this year. It's a lot.
And you said 24 days, 25 days? What are we?
A month and 4 days.
Yeah.
Okay, so you met each other in 2014. This is a fun thought for me. You met each other in 2014. Now you've been married for 1 month. Is there something that you've learned about the other person that you just now learned, like in the last month, about that person? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you like, nah?
No, there's a lot, I think.
Okay.
For me, maybe not even like learning, I guess I always kind of believe this, but just being in close proximity, I get to see that Camila is actually very thoughtful, which, if you know Camila, you may not believe that to be true.
Okay.
I don't understand.
Wow.
Why would you not believe that to be true?
Watching him live in the day-to-day, I'm like, aw, you're so sweet.
There's just a lot of people. So I am thoughtful. I can only just...
Yeah, I know, but even in dating... It just watching someone closely and seeing the way that they move, like, helps you understand, I think, how they're thinking more.
What else? What else have you learned about me?
That he does not like when I leave dishes in the sink. He's really mad.
Mm.
It burns me.
He doesn't like that.
Does not like that at all.
I just saw it in your eyes. I would like to go to the next subject.
Camila, what about you?
That's great. What have I learned about M? You like leaving dishes in the sink. You like leaving things.
I'm going to go check
things.
Your sink when we're done here.
You like leaving things around. I've learned that.
Maybe we do need to move on to the next question.
You're very content to have things just be.
And I call it being at home.
That's what I was about to say. I feel like the home for you is like your rest haven place, just kind of do whatever, because you're on a lot. You're a three, like myself. Mm-hmm. So when you leave here,
two threes.
Yeah. Married to
I would not advise that, honestly.
Wow. Yeah,
okay.
I wouldn't either.
Good to know. Good to know. For anyone tough. Out there who's a three,
two what are performers you? Together,
an eight. An eight.
Yeah.
Dangerous. I feel like two eights together would also be...
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Terrible.
Bloodshed.
Terrible.
Bloodshed. I feel like two nines together being, like, wouldn't get anything done. Aids.
Yeah.
I feel like two twos would just drive each other crazy.
Mix it up.
I feel
That's
like
the
best
point.
Would be two sevens. Two sevens together.
That would be a lot of fun.
You would have no depth in your relationship.
Yeah, at all. But you would have so much fun.
So sorry to all the sevens out there.
You have great memories. You're like, what's your
memories.
Last name?
Yeah, but... I use the home to host people. And so when there's stuff places, I'm like.
Yeah.
Like today. Mm-hmm. You were coming here. Camila woke up stressed. That's what happened.
Oh, man.
Besides that, I've also learned that. Well, I guess, yeah, I didn't not know this. In the way that you've seen my thoughtfulness, I guess, I've seen. This sounds corny and cheap. I don't mean it this way. Your heart, in the sense of like, dang, you care about everything you do a lot. So if there's any people, it's just a lot of care. If there's anything going on, if you're making a meal, you care about it a lot.
Oh, cool. Like, cool.
It's just food.
Yeah.
I'll eat.
That's true.
So. Yeah,
it's cool to me to think about, like, you guys knowing each other for a long time. We're on, off, Africa, back, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. But there's like a level of getting to know each other that you couldn't have gotten to without saying,
oh,
okay, 100%. I commit to you now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's
that
like,
was like tip of the iceberg, man.
Yeah. It's like a totally different gear that you just drop in that you can only get by commitment.
Makes me think, like, why do we even wait to get married?
Yeah.
Now we're at a place of like, oh, now I get to relearn you again. So
yeah.
I mean, I get it. No, don't people don't rush out there, but
if you're out there, you need to get married this week.
Get married. You've been dating for 2 weeks. You don't know him. You've been dating for 2 years.
Some red
you
flags.
Don't know him.
Yeah.
Just go ahead,
just
get married, and find out how.
By yeah. Me.
You will not know anything about them.
Just do it.
Guys, I'm gonna get married. Is there something you guys would tell each other, like, day one, you're at this glow-in-the-dark kickball tournament, and you get to whisper in your ear of your past self in this little high moment, this acknowledgement?
I would just tell myself, that's my wife. I feel like that would have saved me a lot of time and trouble and heartache and all sorts of things if I just knew that at the beginning.
Yeah.
Camille is a planner, so that makes sense. He wants all the details up front.
Yeah. Me and God have an interesting relationship.
I think I would just say, don't try so hard. I'm definitely like controlling, not like in a crazy way, but just like I like to manage projects. I like to be in charge. And I think I spent a lot of time trying to make this relationship work. And most of the times it worked the best when I was not doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's true. That's profound. I didn't know that. That's a great question, Jordan. Thank you.
Fascinating.
Just deposited into our marriage.
Yeah, no, I really like, I feel like I tore down your marriage a little bit at the start here with asking about the cleanliness and such. But I feel like I'm trying to help build us back up here. I would be the worst marriage counselor of all time. this would be my whole thing. Well, I do want to transition. There's a few things going on outside in the world
right now.
I don't know if you've read the news.
We try not
anything.
To leave this apartment.
Yeah, it's dangerous out there. But I do want to transition because I think you guys have a unique perspective on it. Camila, I've seen you post a lot about what's going on. I think you guys are just vocal with your lives and with your thoughts mm-hmm. and your feelings and actions. And I want to know, like, with everything going on out in the world, specifically talk America in this new moment with racism of kind of facing it. I don't think it's a surge, but facing it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What has that been like for you as we've walked through murders very publicly, as we've walked through protests? We're in Atlanta, not far from where the civil rights movement really was cradled in a lot of ways mm-hmm. In the 60s and has been, you know, throughout the year, a big, just part of the conversation. We're in a historic city for that. So, yeah, we're here in this place. So that being going out there, what is that like for you guys? What are you feeling?
It's surreal in the sense of the murders I was used to, this new reckoning is just weird. And I did not know that was coming. And so has been, I feel like I've been playing catch up, honestly. The murders used to, not in the sense I didn't care. If you listen to the past down, you can go back to 2017 and hear episodes around race. This is something I've talk about vocally a lot and often. You can go back to my days leading the Real Movement and conversations we hosted in 2016 about this before that crazy summer. Like, it's been a topic that I've been willing to step into. It's just been surreal that the world, or at least America, wants to step into that conversation too, and I haven't really known what to do with it. Mm-hmm. I haven't known what to make of it. I haven't known what to do with it. I haven't known what to say. I've been confused. I think you could talk from like an outside perspective of me, but knowing me over these years till now, what would you say? How have I been handling it? And then for you, what's it been like for you?
Well, I think the way you have been describing it is pretty accurate of like, I don't know, maybe you should do it of like you're walking with someone and they turn around, like how that's kind of creating some...
The Good Samaritan thing. Yeah. The way I've been talking about it is it's like, this is kind of specific to the church in America, that the church and white supremacy were kind of going on a walk together since the beginning. Like George Whitefield, we talk about the Great Awakening. He fought for slavery to stay around. And it's like, we just somehow ignore that part with all these things. So it's like the church and white supremacy have been walking hand in hand together down the street. The Southern Baptist Convention's a thing. That's a thing is out of white supremacy, right? And I guess in recent years, still walking down the street together, but maybe not holding hands as publicly. But like, you could tell. And now all of a sudden the church is like, if a black person is... on the road, they've walked past the black person who's like, hey, help me. Hey, there's something going on here. And they're just walking down the road past them. And it's like all of a sudden, very rapidly, the church has turned around and is running towards
That's a little bit alarming.
Yeah. And I'm like, wait, why are you here? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Like,
yeah.
Because the last time we encountered you, it did not go great. So you running in now with like a paramedic uniform on, that's what I mean by I don't know what to make of it. I don't know to trust it or not. And some people I think have heard that and think I'm saying I don't know how long it's going to last. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying with what it is, I don't know what to do with it. I don't know whether to trust it more.
A
little skeptical of it.
Yeah.
I think with just any relationship, which this is what, I mean, this is what I think my counselor tells me, maybe the other counselors say this too, is that really genuinely the only way to build trust is over time. Trust is not built by like big grand gestures. And I think there has been a pretty substantial amount of time where this kind of bond of trust has been broken between the black community and really, I guess, anyone who hasn't been interested or hasn't cared, but that would include the church in many ways, or the like white church specifically. And so now that everyone does care suddenly, that's nice, but it's like if you and your boyfriend break up and he did something terrible, him showing up with like flowers, if he's done that one thing over and over and over again, flowers are nice, but really you want him to be trustworthy. Like, you don't want, like, the theatrics of it. Or it's like, okay, that's a great start, but where are we going from here? Mm-hmm. Like, what in the day-to-day is going to really kind of, like, mend this relationship? And so I think that's probably just where the suspicion
I feel
is
like
coming
it's been
in.
In the church and in America as a whole, mm-hmm. where corporations, me and my, one of my bosses at Passion were joking, like, we got to, email from every company about COVID, and all now we're getting an email about every company about Black
Lives
Matter.
We're in this together.
Unsubscribe from a lot of emails.
Like, we're in this together, our take on it.
The billboards on the highway. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, like, we saw one from Porsche, and I'm like, what are you doing?
As I'm from the country, and as my dad would say, you don't have a dog in this fight.
Yeah, there's a lot of care all of a sudden. And it's like, it's cool that you've written Black Lives Matter on the streets of 37 cities. And awesome, I guess, that Aunt Jemima's being retired.
That one threw me off. I didn't
know what I was or the changing the flag in Mississippi, or all of the NASCAR drivers walking with the one black NASCAR guy, I guess. Like, all that's interesting. It's just I don't know what to... Mm-hmm.
But I think you might be different than other people as well. Like, some people may, like, really find encouragement and hope and, like, these sentiments. So I don't want to ignore that either.
Totally. Yeah, mm-hmm.
I think specifically, like, definitely just specifically to Camilo, as your perspective as a black man in America, you're definitely more focused on, like, okay, well, what are the systems in place that are changing? Like, what laws are different now?
Right. Or what are we doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, the hard kind of what's happening.
Yeah. The image part's easy.
Right.
It's easy to post a black square.
Right. Very easy.
And especially when everybody else is doing it.
Right. So it's like, it's not courageous anymore.
Right. Right.
You know? So
that's good. The hard stuff is that long-term commitment piece. It's actually understanding conversations, whatever, I think.
And not running in to be my biggest thing for anyone who isn't black right now, or who isn't, like, I guess, in to white people, whatever. My biggest thing is just, like, this is not about you. Mm-hmm. So, like, do your best, even if it's not your intention. Like, all of these things can really come off as, look at me, I'm doing the right thing. Look, I'm standing, I'm being an ally. I'm standing with the black community. And it's like, at the end of the day, you're going to catch flack from, in 2020 at this point, anything you post on social media is going to make someone mad.
Yes, 100%.
Like, so we can just throw that all in the wash. That's done. The point is, between you and God, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And, like, if you can go to sleep at night and you can rest, like, knowing, okay, I really am doing my best to understand. I'm doing my best to, support these causes, to seek justice, to, like, seek Christ in this. Then that's going to be more of a priority than, like, looking like you're doing something when really. Because I think that just gets a lot of people in trouble when they try and be super vocal about something they don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
And then that goes really bad. So it's best just to do what you need to do.
Yeah, you're talking about the paramedic outfit. It's like people dressing up as paramedics for Halloween, but not actually being paramedics running
exactly.
after them. You know, it's like, all right, I got the answers.
I'm like, wait, don't touch me. Yeah, I don't trust you.
And there are people who are trained in this, who have been doing this for years and years and years, mm-hmm. and I think that's where so many people. Yes, 100%. Mm-hmm. Highlight and learn from. And again, it doesn't mean don't speak. It doesn't mean, hey, someone should save that guy, or I'm going to go try and help if there's not a paramedic around.
Right.
Right.
But if there's a paramedic around, then I should help the paramedic do it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if the paramedic looks like the person who they're going to understand it even more. It's mm-hmm. like,
yeah,
I think, yeah, it's such this weird balance. You are right, though. You'll piss off somebody online no
there's
matter
no,
what.
We just got, everyone needs to just release that.
That's, yeah. Tony Collier was on here a few weeks ago.
She's great.
And she's excellent. She's so great. And she was like, yeah, dude, you post something and people say, no, you need to be quiet right now and amplify black voices. And then the next moment you hear, no, you need to speak up and use your mm-hmm. voice and your privilege. And it's like, I think a lot of my
just
friends
don't
are
get
like,
trapped in that.
Exactly. But if you're living and if you're posting and if you're speaking for yourself,
mm-hmm.
yeah, totally different than if you are saying, yeah, between you and God. I think that was a great way to put it. and to take yourself out of the center of the narrative.
Right.
And to say, it's okay for it to be about someone else right now. And that is actually the most Christ-like thing I can do.
Mm-hmm.
Way harder, but.
No. Yep.
I think we missed that in a lot of ways.
Totally.
I want to, something you're saying, you're talking about how you don't know whether to trust the person coming back. And I think something is, I've talked to a lot of white people or, about this who are struggling with this moment. I've had a few conversations with, and I think one of the things that trips people up the most, white people, is treating history as a now thing too. Like they have a hard time seeing the collective action versus the individual action. And so there's this feeling of like, well, I wasn't a slave owner. And so, you know, it's we're past that now, aren't we? And the same for black people, like, oh no, people have voting rights and such now. And I think it's very hard for people to see the bigger narrative and why that's so important. And maybe just, I don't know, do you feel, is there a feeling of like, I am connected to this larger narrative and the people involved? Do you think that plays into it? Or do you think people are right about like, no, we really should just treat me as an individual now?
I think the individuality is a privilege that black people don't have because being black was a crime. And that's something I've been like a month or two ago, I was talking to Emily and I was like, wait a minute. It was literally a crime to be black, punishable by enslavement. And for some reason, even though I knew, yes, they brought black people here and enslaved them, it didn't register that the crime there is the color of your skin. So off the rip, I've been robbed of individuality because of the color of my skin. For white people in America, that has not been the case. Mm-hmm. And so it's would make sense to see things, I think, from an individual perspective because you've been responsible for yourself and maybe your family. And
that's just a very like Western point of view. Like the American context is built on individuality, to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything's private. Everything's just the other side of capitalism is individuality and the freedoms that brings and all that. So I think when we're looking at it, we have to remember that okay, their skin was an issue. What did that do though? So we talk about slavery again as this thing like from the past, and it is from the past, but it had effects. So like when I got this tattoo of a palm tree on me, that happened in the past, but it has effects now in that you see it and I can't do anything about it. I can't cover it up. It's here. Until I do something like go get laser removal surgery, it's going to be here. And that's a very drastic thing and a very painful process. And that's what I think is missing from the conversation when that's the perspective of like, well, that's from the past. I didn't own slaves, blah, 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 blah. Yes. not breaking news.
Yeah.
If that's what you heard, then either we misspoke or you misheard us.
Right.
Because what we've been saying is not you are bad. You being guilty is not helpful to me.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
That's what no one is fighting for you to be sorry. Like a moment of repentance, yes, but not a moment of shame. I was watching Stephen Furtick's conversation with John Gray, and that's something he said is we don't understand the difference between shame and repentance. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're getting caught up in this moment of feeling like, I guess I should feel bad and
like feeling bad is not the answer.
And I'm like, I don't have time for you to feel bad.
Yeah.
Like, again, to my way of thinking is just, all right, but what are we going to do? So your feelings are nice. But again, you didn't own slaves, Jordan. You didn't own slaves, Emily. So I don't need that sentiment of feeling bad. What I need is to understand, okay, but me being white, regardless of if my ancestors ever owned slaves or did not, if my grandmother came to this country from Ireland for a white person, like, and they never were a part of this, that's fine. Your skin allows individuality. Mm-hmm. And so you are now operating in a system called America that is been now built to benefit you and for you to run as an individual to make what you want of your life. That's what black people are asking for, is to be seen as individuals to make what we want of our lives. But instead, you have the prison industrial complex. Instead, you have that past redlining, we still can't get the same loans. Instead, you have the notion that affirmative action is stealing something from a white person. All these things, it seems that anytime we try to write slavery, it's whoa. You're benefiting them in a way that isn't fair. To which I say, correct. That's what has to be done now, because there was 200 years that did not disappear. It was building wealth for white people and stealing mm-hmm. wealth from black people. Mm-hmm. And so now, coming down the line, just like the racial wealth gap is a great example, that the median household income in America, or median household wealth in America is, for a white family, is, I think, $174,000 for a household. For a black family, I believe, is $17,000. Mm-hmm. That isn't because black people all mismanage their money, or even majority mismanage
right,
their money,
right.
Or even a significant minority mismanage their money. What it is, oh, they haven't been building wealth for 400 years. They've been attempting to,
but having to fill the gap.
Having that was to there fill gaps.
Right.
And racism in America isn't historic, but what I like to say is racism is strategic, meaning, all right, yeah, no slavery, so now they can build wealth. Well, no, they can't, because you passed Jim Crow laws and segregation. Well, now they can build wealth. Well, no, you destroyed Black Wall Street in Tulsa. Well, now they can build wealth. Well, no, because now we're redlining. Well, now they can build wealth. Well, no, because now you're giving them subprime loans. Well, now they can build wealth. Well, no, because when the financial crisis of 2009 happened, that affected black people more. Well, now they can build wealth. Well, no, because this pandemic is affecting black families more than it's affecting white families because of things like environmental racism, or that more black people, because of all those things, are now low-income workers who are working.
Who have to work.
They can't work from home.
Right.
In the same way.
Right.
And so it's like, that's what we're saying, is equity is only going to come by doing something drastic to write it. And that's more what I'm interested in, as opposed to a Black Lives Matter written in the street. Mm-hmm. Is what are we doing about a system that, one, has done a lot of work already, that isn't going to disappear. Even if you say, all right, stop, you still have robbed somebody for 400 years and given it Robin Hood style, reverse Robin Hood, whatever you want to call it, to another person for 400 years mm-hmm. that they get to keep. And I'm not saying you shouldn't keep it. I'm saying they deserve something.
Right.
Something I feel like I've noticed is, when white people look at themselves, we want to be held responsible as an individual. But when they look at the black community, they are holding them responsible as the black community.
Mm, that's good.
Like, even yeah. just look at the protests that are going on. Tell me, if you're listening to this, you haven't discredited the protests because of the rioting. Because of, you weren't looking at the protesters as individuals. well, they're look at that mm-hmm. black on black crime. Look at them destroying their neighborhoods. Look at them doing that. Well, you're viewing them as a community. But when you talk about yourself being held responsible, you want to be held responsible as an individual who didn't have slaves or whatever. And so it's just like, well, let's just pick a lane.
Right. Where are you going to sit? Where are you going to sit?
We can be wherever you want, but like, let's at least be consistent. Because when we're not consistent, that in itself is bias. That's saying, I have the right to be treated as an individual, but they do not. And that's an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so, I could think of 127 white groups of people I don't want to be associated with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If there's a KKK rally out in the streets, like there was one in Rome, Georgia, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't associate with that. But yeah, you're the same way. You see someone burn down a Wendy's or whatever, and then everyone's like, oh, it's the riot.
Look
what they are doing. Right. And it's so, it's an individualistic thing. It is so hard for, I think, most white people. It was hard for me to acknowledge in the first place I was dealt a different hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I can choose how to play it. Mm-hmm. I can be a good player, or I could be a really terrible player mm-hmm. with my hand.
Right.
But everyone gets a hand, and the hands are not equal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that doesn't mean that you were born rich. Right. Or that doesn't mean that
you didn't have to work hard.
Yeah, like,
but my start was a better start, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, and the system benefited me. I had the... Yeah, and that's... People will point at, well, this black executive made it. Why can't everyone make it? And they'll point at white people and be like, well, this, you know, you go to a, you can find low-income white communities too, and I think people will point at those, and it's, yeah, totally, because you could be a good or a bad, like, you could play your hand well or poorly,
mm-hmm.
but some people just don't have a hand that can win at all,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on where you're at.
Some people are just more disadvantaged than others.
It's privilege, and that's racial, that's economic, that is the state you live in, yeah. that is,
the
so
fact
many
that
things.
I love that you use that example of, like, look at this person. Mm-hmm. If black people make up 13% of America, then don't talk to me about any of those until they make up 13% of the billionaires in this country.
Yep.
But if you can point out the five of them, then that is the example of the issue.
Yeah.
That, you know, Oprah and Robert and the guy who owns BET and whoever else,
Tyler
Woods and Tyler Perry, maybe. That's our point.
Yep.
That, you know, Barack Obama was president. You probably can't even name all the U.S. presidents.
Yep. True.
Yep.
This is the point.
That's the whole... I think there are three black CEOs in the Fortune 500.
Yes. Until they make up 13% of everything, let's not have that conversation.
We had... a few weeks ago, I had my parents on here, and my dad's a pastor, has been his whole life, in the first church.
A PK, just like Emily.
PK.
Yeah, I feel you there.
Uh-huh. It's rough out here.
it's a life.
It is a life. His first church, he was 26. He's my age now. He got his pastor his first church. Small, like conservative white church outside of Tampa, Florida. And he invited a biracial couple to the church. They come, they hang out, leave, and there's a meeting that night. The elders of the church come to my dad, 26-year-old dad, like 50, 60, 70, 80-year-old elders. And they literally said to him, you need to fix this problem, and they can't come back here. And you need to be the one to make sure they don't come back here.
Sheesh.
And he obviously said, no, it's not going to happen. And they're screaming at him, whatever. And that week, they let their dog go, never saw their dog again. Someone shot a bullet through their window. They were getting knocks on the doors, and people were running away. My dad sent the kids away, and his wife, my mom, away, and pastors his church for a time, trying to do this. Poetic, a year later, a sinkhole opened up and ate the church, which is awesome. But
the Lord said,
the guy was like, uh-uh.
All right.
Yeah. Some
right.
real
God
Old
so
Testament
funny.
Stuff right
really
there.
Laugh.
He's petty sometimes,
he
but
is.
I like
he
it.
So he just
is.
Opened it up.
Like, it's funny till it's happening to you, but it's still funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, the overwhelming response I got from white people was, oh, that happened in 1990? That's so recent. I can't believe that's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2020 now.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, I don't know if we've said it, but you probably picked up by now. Emily, you're a white girl. Camille, you're a black guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're living in 2020. Does that shock you at all that there's something like that happened? Or are you guys experiencing this as a couple.
No, no surprises.
That doesn't shock us at all.
I think there were race riots in the county you were from.
In
the 90s?
I'm not completely sure, so I don't want to push that, but I do think it was like early 90s.
Yeah.
So. We were walking down the street on the Beltline a few months ago. And
in Atlanta, on the Beltline.
Mm-hmm.
And
getting ice cream.
And elderly white gentleman yelled out, there's your reparations.
Excuse me?
To which
the Holy Spirit had to be at play for him to not lose his life by my hand.
Oh my God.
One, I was stunned. One, I had to look around because I wasn't even looking at the gentleman. And I was like, one, what did he say? Who was he talking? Wait, it was me. Like, it took a minute. Like, racism often, when it's that overt, honestly takes more time to process, register. Because
yeah.
I'm like,
huh?
So no surprise.
Yeah.
And again, this moment didn't start with George Floyd. And yes, Black Lives Matter now is very popular. Like it is, I think there's a poll that saying Black Lives Matter is currently more popular than the president. Very popular, but
like that doesn't take too much right now.
Right. That's the thing. Like Black Lives Matter has been around for 7 years.
Yeah.
And 60 days ago, 50 days ago, that poll wouldn't have been true. It was still controversial then. And so, no surprises.
I mean, we just had a nice little date night and watched the movie Loving, which is about whenever interracial marriage became legal. So we had a little celebration night. But when did that happen?
In 67?
67, and then like the last state to enact it was Alabama in like
2000.
Yeah, 2000.
2000.
We couldn't have gotten married in Alabama.
And Mississippi's taking the Confederate emblem off the flag in 2020.
Right.
So I think people have to understand that's how history is going to record this, not how the history books have recorded it now, where civil rights has like a half a page in your eighth grade social studies book. But that we've been in a civil rights moment and people being free. It's not going to say 1865 100 years from now. It'll say between 1865 to 2020.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
Maybe, probably till 2030. There was a movement going on. And over 200 something years, we eradicated racism. Not a remember back then and oh, look at these surprise pop-ups now.
Yeah, that's how I think a lot of people are seeing it now. And that's why people are surprised when they hear about something like that.
Right.
Just because, I don't, it's just a wider picture, I think, than, which, I mean, for better or worse, like, if you are a white person living in a white family, living in a white community, you probably don't know. I mean, now you do, but 10 years ago. And that's just what privilege is. It's just having the option to care, right?
Right.
Or to even like, your interests are not going to go figure this out.
Right.
So if you're in the middle of nowhere, Georgia.
Or on the Beltline, Georgia.
Or on the Beltline. Yeah. Or on the Beltline.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Or in
that was wild.
Forsyth County, where there were no black people until the 90s because they ran them all out in the 20s.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we didn't. That's growing right up, I wasn't really. I had a very few black friends because there were just very few black people in our county because we made them leave.
Yeah. And the whole everything, the whole narrative is, right, slavery happened, Abraham Lincoln freedom, then the KKK, and then MLK freedom, and then that was the end.
Mm-hmm.
Civil Rights Act of 67 is the end of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if that's our narrative, we've missed a lot. And you're right. If they need to be rewritten, and we need to talk about now.
That's the thing. Why I keep getting to the systems of like, I don't want people to wait for racism to be sitting on someone's neck for 9 minutes for you to be like, racist. I want you to drive around the whatever the poor neighborhood is in your city and see who lives there and see where the nearest supermarket is and look at that as racism, that there are no supermarkets here. And then I'm going to talk about their weight or the health disparities of this community, or I guess they just need to work hard. Racism is strategic.
Yeah.
It's not historic.
Right.
We do it in pretty much every area of life. There are two versions of how this can play out. And that's what I think people are missing and seeing, like, oh, wow, they're hanging nooses. Like, that's bad. Or what happened to Breonna Taylor or Ahmaud Arbery, that can't happen. Like, I jog, they should be able to jog. But it's so much deeper than someone standing over someone after they shot them and calling them the N-word. Like, it is, there's no supermarkets in that community. It is, they have all these title loan services in that community. If I want a loan, I just get a credit card.
Right.
Seeing it like that.
I think because that can sound, I think, overwhelming if you're listening and you like really don't have a ton of context other than just the things that he just mentioned, that can feel overwhelming. And I think a really funny, like silly way to think about it that is helpful is think about racism like your mom thought about you when you were in school. You know how like moms are just extra, and if you came home and were like, well, mom, I think this boy is being mean to me, even if he wasn't, your mom would like call the principal.
Yeah.
And be like, I cannot believe you're letting my daughter or son experience this. Like, moms are high key aware of the little things in their children's life that make their life more difficult or like correct. Right.
Yeah.
And so just taking a stance like that, like it's not always so overt, and the root of the problem aren't even the overt things. It's mm-hmm. being able to notice like, oh, my friend is getting treated differently right now. Why is that? Like, look at it like the mom of like a third grader. And then you might actually start to see like, okay, there's more going on here than maybe I thought there was before.
That's a beautiful picture. Like the mom of a third grader. I love that. Those moms will get you.
They really will. They're crazy. But that's how we got to be. Good.
Yeah. And if from the start you're set up to believe that racism's not real anymore, you're going to find your way to that.
For sure.
Yeah. Or eventually you're going to watch the, what's her face?
Candace
video. And you're going to say, oh, it's not that bad, you know, whatever. But on the flip side, if you're set out to say, hey, I'm going to find the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find these systems, the strategic racism that is in our society. And it is much harder, takes much more effort, and it takes a willingness to say, I've been wrong.
For sure.
And it's hard to get there.
Emily, say what you said about how, like, if you're a kid and you learn something new, it's okay. But when you're an adult, it's tough.
On the past... the last podcast that we were talking, just specifically, I think to white people as they're learning is just to like be okay with learning. Whenever kids learn something new, they're super excited because they learned something. They come home, they're like, oh my gosh, I learned that the sun is round, or, you know, whatever. I'm so glad you know that.
Yeah.
But as adults, when we learn something, that's automatically coupled with like a feeling of shame because we think, well, we're adults. We're supposed to know everything. And I feel like that could be really keeping a lot of people from being more helpful than maybe they are, because they just feel ashamed, or even the people around them are like, well, you should have known. And like, that's true, but we're here now. So let's move on and keep learning instead of associating all these negative
responses. So good. Be willing to change.
Yeah.
Do you guys have hope? Are you hopeful in this thing or not? That something is going to be different this time?
Well, syrup will forever be changed. I know that.
Yeah.
Syrup is changed.
Do they have to change Mrs. Butterworth?
We actually have both of those in our cabinet.
Really?
Yep.
Yes and no. Not that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's honest. I think there's some fatigue for sure.
Yeah. It seems more like
that Corona thing got boring. So this is a more interesting take, and ooh, I can do something, and some things will change. Like I said, the syrup industry has been rocked, and Mississippi will have a new flag. The systems, I don't know. And until the systems change, I don't know that what black people are asking for changes, or that we just get to that individuality we talked about earlier anytime soon. So, yes and no in that Dr. King's quote, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Obviously, we're living in a more equitable society than our parents did, and their parents before that, and their parents before that. So, yes, in that manner. In terms of substantial shifts, we'll see. I don't want to say no, because this moment is different. I was listening to Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a kindred brother of mine, because he is as pessimistic as I am.
So, yeah, he's just like, we're done.
This is the end. And he was like, this is an insane moment. This looks nothing like the 60s. This is a much more gathered, universal, cohesive conglomerate of people calling for change than in the 60s. And so he's hopeful, which that shocked me. So I don't want to say no. I just want to say, I don't know. I'm not like holding my breath for anything.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think I have to wrestle pretty daily with God to have hope.
And my, I am hopeful in the sense of Jesus.
Totally.
And
totally,
sovereignty.
Yes. Yep.
And
right.
That he won't be mocked forever, that hell exists for a reason, that life is but a vapor, that everyone will stand before him and be held accountable. In all that, I have hope. In terms of America in 2020 to 2030, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. And that ultimately, any person, any system, any environment, any protest is going to let you down. Every time.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are or what person you're talking about. They are going to let you down, and they will not support your life. And if your hope is in that person,
right,
or that movement or that time or that law changing or that flag or whatever, you know, if it's in any of those things, yeah, it will let you down, because as we've seen, this is a system that has continually let people down over and over and over again.
I've heard a lot of people say, especially in the Christian sphere, after Corona, man, everybody is so many people are gonna, like, they're really thinking about things now. They're really gonna, like, turn to Christ now because, you know, Corona's, like, killing so many people. That may be true, but I feel more strongly about that sentiment in this case.
Right.
Like, Corona is one thing. There is a literal pandemic of people killing people.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I would do personally in this time if I didn't have Christ. If I could not, like, daily go to him. And, like, he is the only person I can count on. And so I'm just like, I don't know. If you're listening and you don't know God, like, I feel like that, my heart goes out to you. And there is an opportunity to have more hope and to have more stability and to have more rest. Because if I didn't, I would be a disaster. Like, I would be a nutcase.
And that doesn't come from God being comforting or a nice idea, but from the truth. Like, unless the only reason it's comforting is if it's true and backed by evidence, which we believe that it is, that he is. I just don't want people to hear it and think like, oh, get God and I'll feel better.
Right. No, you'll know more.
Right.
Your eyes will be opened to truth.
And you'll learn what true justice is.
Yes. Yeah,
you will get a taste of, like,
because anything we're trying to do is broken justice.
Right.
Just like every sunset we've seen is a broken sunset. Any justice that we deliver to another human, that's broken justice. It hasn't fully accomplished what it needs to. So, like you said, knowing true justice and what that's going to look like and what's going to work out. And
I mean, he was a brown man who was murdered, and he was the mm-hmm. father of a brown man who was unjustly murdered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anytime, like, he can relate. If yeah. nothing else, I'm just like, okay, well, you get that I'm scared. So,
and that's where I think the gap is for the church to step in. Mm-hmm. No one should want the truth, and no one should want justice as much as the church,
mm-hmm.
because that's what God wants.
Yep.
And that's Jesus' heart is justice.
Yeah.
And that is the opening, and one of the biggest tragedies of this whole thing to me is that the church has continually, like you said, walked hand in hand with white supremacy when it had the opportunity
mm-hmm.
to be the standard
mm-hmm.
for seeking justice.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I have also heard from some people is like, oh, well, there's always going to be sin. There's always going to be hurt. There's always going to be whatever. And I'm like, well, that's not what you were saying when every year we give money to human trafficking.
Right.
That's not what you say every year when you get your church together and go to Africa or you yep. like anywhere, right?
Abortion,
on your mission trip.
We don't say that.
No. Like, there's no other cause in the church where you aren't hopeful, where you don't rally around it continuously, and where you
do
don't
something.
Get tired.
Yes.
Even when we see it getting worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, human trafficking is getting worse. Since the beginning of the, at least in our sphere, the Christian movement getting behind it, it's not getting better. We will still give to it this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we will still stand behind that cause because we believe it's a cause worth standing behind. And so I'm just like, no, yes, there will always be sin. The poor will always be with us. But it's our job to fight mm-hmm. that tooth and nail until we die. Like, what other purpose do you have?
Mm-hmm. And I don't want anyone leading the church to think they're getting talked down to from a 26 and 24 and 25-year-old.
Yeah, totally.
But it's just the same. Like, and it doesn't mean God's...
Not even leading, just force, people who attend the church.
God's going to forsake the church, or is like some crazy judgment is coming. Like, God is a parent and a groom to this bride, and he's going to lead her and guide her in the same way that he led the children of Israel. They sin all the time. And he's just like, all right, going to have to send you to Babylon for a while.
Yep.
And then brings them out. Like, continually. All right, you're going to have to wander the wilderness for 40 years. And then,
but I'm going to get you through it.
But I'm going to get you through it. Totally. And to go at it with that hope of, like, and to understand that, like, we have sinned here, first of all,
mm-hmm.
not to just think we're great. Then we have another problem. Mm-hmm. But to understand we have sinned, now there's going to be a reckoning there. But the Lord is going to be faithful through all of that while we have not been faithful. That's mm-hmm. our gospel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I could have this conversation forever. I think this is so. I'm just learning a lot from you guys, and love hearing about your hearts on this. I think it's so helpful, and hopefully helpful to people listening right now, just to hear honestly where everyone's at and what you're thinking. There's one question I ask everyone, and I think right now I started this podcast to talk about courage before kind of this moment, and right now you hinted at it earlier, what actually takes courage is not just posting, it's not the image, it's doing something here. And so it's been so funny to see a moment right now where we need courage, and we need courageous people.
Mm-hmm.
We need courageous people in the church, we need courageous people on the streets, we need courageous people in government, we need courageous people everywhere
mm-hmm.
who are willing to not worry about the image. How would you guys, from your perspective, define courage? What does that mean? What does it look like?
I'll go. For me, I think courage genuinely is just being tied so closely to Christ that you know what he says. So then you're not insecure about the decisions you're making. Mm. We've been reading together in Joshua, and Joshua himself has to have a ton of courage as he kind of takes on this mantle that Moses left behind. But even we're like at the beginning, Rahab, who's a part of this like other community who hides Joshua and his men, right?
The men. I don't know if Joshua was there, but some men.
Hides them. Like, that took courage, right? And I think just those actions, like actions of leadership, actions that create change, actions that bring a people into a new place, are every time associated with knowing what God said, being confident in that, because there's just a lot of opportunity to question those decisions and a lot of opportunity to think, well, I don't know if this is the right thing. I don't know. And it's just, I think just stepping boldly into that is what courage is to me.
That's cool.
I can't say it any better than that. Yep. Yeah. Courage is believing what God said and acting upon it
and doing it.
Even when it doesn't make a ton of sense.
Yeah. Security in his actions.
Yeah. When Joshua is told, hey, like, four times in that first combo, I need to be strong and courageous. I need to be strong and courageous. I need to be strong and courageous. Mm-hmm. Joshua, you could argue, already was in that 40 years prior. He and Caleb had gone into the land and they were ready to go in. But I think as you spend more time with the Lord, what he calls you to do requires more and more courage. And he was like, I know that you saw Moses go up to the Red Sea and it part before him. I need you to be courageous because it's not going to do that with you. You're actually going to have to get in the Jordan. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a little more. But I love that. The courage is to believe what God said and act.
And just do it.
No.
Which is literally the action. That is bringing heaven to earth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is exactly what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven is a place where God's will is done. So if you are doing God's will in your life, and in your sphere of influence, whatever that is, you are literally bringing heaven to earth, which is such a cool way to define it. Thanks
building
for
building the kingdom. Yep.
Well, yeah, I love this. I love you guys. You both work on a ton of cool stuff. Where do people find you if they want to find you on the internet? I know we got.
I have a new Instagram name.
You got a new thing? Okay, what is it?
It's my new last name. It's very long.
It's a very long Instagram now. Hey. You go first, dear.
Yeah, you can find me, I guess, on Instagram. It's the best. At Emily Beth Buchanan. My website is on there. My card company is on there.
What's your website and your card company Instagram? Give those two.
Okay, don't get mad at me, Camilo. I haven't changed my website name yet.
It's still EmilyBethThomas.com?
It is EmilyBethThomas.com.
Never mind. Just go to her Instagram and click the link.
I know you can go there.
I'm going to edit that out.
It's a long process. Plain and simple. All this name.
If people need the cool cards, thank you cards, I love you cards. What else you got? Mommy cards, I'm proud of you cards,
all kind of stuff. They're just cards for small moments.
If you need any cards at all, plain and simple.
Where do they find that? What's the
plain
Instagram?
And simple co.
Great.
On Instagram.
Plain and simple co. Yeah.
You can follow me at I'm King Cam on everything, and my website is CamiloBuchanan.com.
There you go. Check them out. Guys, thanks for being here. Thanks for being a part of the conversation.
Lastly, and if you're in Atlanta and you're 18 to 25, 26, 27.
Kick it.
Come join us in our young adult ministry. Right now, the Instagram is at PCC College. That'll also change along with Emily's website name. but for now, go ahead and click that and come join us. We're excited to get back to it in the fall.
It's coming out.
Yeah.
All right. Guys, great time. Thanks for doing
this. Thanks for
having us. Yeah, thanks
for this is great,
friends.
Hey, real quick before you go, thanks so much for listening to this episode of Burn the Ships. If you enjoyed the conversation, make sure to share it on social media with a friend so that they can hear it too. We'll be back very soon with more episodes just like this one. Thanks for listening.